Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Final session. Won't finish the whole instructions of Jud Bharat to King Rahugana, but we'll get some idea of what his message is. We started already. Rahugana, out of his Ishwara Bhav, his disposition as a king, a controller and ruler of his citizens, became quite angry, uncontrollably angry. First it was mild, and then it was uncontrollable. And again, as Prabhupada expressed, he spoke foul words, criticizing. And after hearing them, for the first time we find any indication of his doing so, he, Jud Bharat, spoke. He revealed his position as a topmost realized devotee beyond the bodily conception of life and absorbed in thought of Krishna. He didn't go to the Krishna part yet, he just went to the beyond the body part. Because in the following chapter he's going to go to the Krishna part, which is the basis and support and foundation of beyond the bodily conception, truly and factually. So I want to go over again, I read and we discussed some of the things that Jud Bharat said. I want to read how Prabhupada describes some of this. Starting with the purport of text number 10, for those of you that have books, where Jud Bharat is saying, you've spoken of me in terms of the body, and this is quite incorrect. But you've spoken sarcastically, where you say I'm fat or thin, but yet the soul is neither fat nor thin. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things, but I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny, nor anything else you have mentioned. So the purport, very nice. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Deha Smriti Nahi Yar Sangsara Bandhan Kahantar. Only one who is spiritually advanced has no connection with the body or with the bodily actions and reactions. When one comes to understand that he is not the body and therefore is neither fat nor skinny, one attains the topmost form of spiritual realization. Just like in the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi verse, you know that one, 241, Bhagavad Gita. Twice in the purport, Prabhupada speaks, or he writes, the topmost stage of realization in Krishna consciousness is. And renunciation of the material conception of life. It doesn't say, you know, to be in the rasa dance with Radha and Krishna in Seva Kunj or something like that. Be situated in one's eternal rasa, in his svarup, in the spiritual world. It doesn't say that. Because it's the basis. Without that basis, without renouncing the bodily and material conception of life, one can't go there. If you're attached to Krishna, or even on the path of bhakti, and you have that realization, you'll get there. And then he says it again at the very end. So in summary, the essence is, same point. When cannot become advanced in spiritual life if one holds on to the bodily conception of life. So here, it says it in the positive, and then the next is in the negative. When one is not spiritually realized, the bodily conception entangles one in the material world. Like a number of the questions that we've heard, the Yabhat questions. You know, I know what the teaching is, and I know what the standard is, but I'm down here, and, you know, I'm not up there. And I get caught up down here. So what to do? It requires, it's maybe a gradual process, but it requires renouncing the bodily conception of life. And how do we do that? We engage, so it's going to be described, but we engage in the process of sadhana bhakti. We engage in that which the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are recommending. We chant Hare Krishna. Even we have a bodily conception of life, we chant Hare Krishna. Japa and kirtan and chant, the primary means of deliverance for this age. And we engage in the process of Bhagavat Dharma, Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So Prabhupada quotes that verse, as a matter of fact. At the present moment, all human society is laboring under the bodily conception. Therefore, in the Shastras, people in this age are referred to as dvipada pashu, two-legged animals. No one can be happy in a civilization conducted by such animals. So we don't go giving discourse to animals because they don't have the capacity to understand. So what about the two-legged animals that also don't have the capacity to understand? Our Krishna consciousness movement is trying to raise fallen human society to the status of spiritual understanding. It is not possible for everyone to become immediately self-realized like Judd Bharat. However, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:18, Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, by spreading the Bhagavat principles, we can raise human society to the platform of perfection. I mean, for starters, to the platform of human life. Not just dvipada pashu, but dvipada manu. Two-legged human beings. And then from the human platform further, by the Bhagavad Dharma principles. When one is not affected by the bodily conceptions, one can advance to the Lord's devotional service. And then, so this spiritually realized platform is described again. The more we advance our freedom from the bodily conception, the more we are fixed in devotional service, and the more we are happy and peaceful. Little flash report from our GBC meeting. We, the past several years, have taken what was so many days, and rather than increasing the number of days, we just inserted out of those days, 4 days is for planning our future, strategic planning, and the rest is whatever else has to happen. We just, like, you know, squish everything else in. so we can plan our future. And the theme of planning our future is very simple. More devotees, happier devotees. That's our strategic plan. I mean, that's our goal, and then there's strategies to get to the goal. More devotees, happier devotees. So here's the happier devotees part. The more devotees part is also expanding Bhagavad Dharma. The happier devotees is, get rid of the bodily conception, please. And combine that with the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, and it's happier devotees. Srila Madhvacharya says that those who are too materially affected continue the bodily conception. Such persons are concerned with different bodily symptoms, whereas one freed from bodily conceptions lives without the body, even in the material condition. I mean, like, we use it, but it's not the center of our consciousness. We use it. And if something goes wrong with it, we deal with it, but it's not, everything's finished. Peaceful. Vrindavan. Tractors. Tractors plus bad roads makes for lots of noise. Okay, so I just wanted to share some. So I'm going to read one more, just Prabhupada's purports, because they're so powerful and very elegantly written. On the verse where he says to the king, "You think you're the master and I'm the servant. If that's so, you should order me, and I will follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary, and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nevertheless, if you have that conception, just order me. I'll serve." Prabhupada's purport. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, "Aham mameti." You know what that means, right? It's right in this fifth canto, fifth chapter, same as we are. Chapter 8. "Aham mameti." I am this body and this bodily relationship. In this bodily relationship, he is my master, he is my servant, she is my wife, and he is my son. Mameti. All these conceptions are temporary due to the inconceivable change of body and the arrangement of material nature. He refers to the metaphor, we are like straws gathered together floating on the ocean, or the river, or the lake. And then he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, "Mayara Bhashe Yacha Beshe Kachu Haba Dubu Bhai Ye Krishna Das E Vishvas Karle Tara Dukanai." Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that all men and women are floating like straws on the waves of material nature. If they come to the understanding that they are eternal servants of Krishna, they will put an end to this floating condition. Poetic. Nice. Because that's as Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, it's similar to several metaphors that are found in the Bhagavatam. One of them is by the churning of the waves of the ocean, some seaweed becomes loosened
from the bottom of the ocean, and it floats to the surface. And by the same churning of the waves, some of those clumps of seaweed come together and intertwine with other clumps of seaweed. And by the same movement of the waves of the ocean, those clumps of seaweed are separated. So what is the meaning of similarly? What is the meaning of people coming together and becoming family members or friends, etc.? It's just the similar to the movements of the ocean waves, bringing us together and separating us, the actions of time and the modes of nature and karma. It's not significant. Or another one is, by coming together in the morning, gathering water at the well, and there's chatter amongst the people who are coming to get the water, and then they separate after some time. How significant is that coming together? Now they have the relationship and then they're separated. Or another example is coming together at an inn and taking food and drink, and there's conversation and there's some exchange, and then they separate. And even Hiranyakashipu, at the death of his brother Hiranyaksha, uses some of those same examples to say, you know, one should not lament over the loss of someone because it's no more meaningful than these things. Straw is also used. Some wind comes and some straw comes, and some straw overlaps with some other straw, and the same wind comes and it blows away some of the straw. So one may become attached to some temporary arrangement, but by the movements of time, things come together and things come apart. And things may stay for some time, but then it's all temporary, however long. One moment, or 1 year, or 100 years, but it's temporary. So we should not become attached to the temporary. Recognize what it is. It's temporary. It's some temporary configuration of material energy that's moved by the time factor. It comes into being and it goes out of being and it's gone. So one should not be attached to those temporary features. One should be attached to Sat. Very simple. Very simple to say. Very simple to logically understand. It's not so simple to detach oneself from attachments unless one becomes attached to the Supreme. And one becomes attached to the Supreme, those other attachments fade. They just fade. Doesn't mean you become irresponsible or I don't care. It's just you don't become attached where your happiness and unhappiness is dependent upon what's the configuration today. It's upon Sat. I have some service to Krishna to do. Let me be attached to Krishna. Here's some part of my service to Krishna. So I'm very conscientious about my service to Krishna. And there's another spirit soul, or a whole bunch of spirit souls of its family, and I'm concerned about the well-being of these souls as a service unto Krishna. And if Krishna wishes, it can go this way. If Krishna wishes, it can go that way. I'm simply his servant, and according to whatever arrangements he makes, I serve him. We're certainly making some choices, but the fundamental principle is service to Krishna. And that's where our attachment should go. That's the lesson. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3:37, Kamesha Krodesha Rajoguna Samudbhava. Due to the modes of passion, we desire so many things, and according to our desire or anxiety, and according to the order of the Supreme Lord, material nature gives us a certain type of body. For some time we play as master or servant, as actors play on the stage under someone else's direction. While we are in the human form of life, we should put an end to this nonsensical stage performance. Again, poetic expression, very eloquently stated. That's just, you know, dealing with the modes of material nature, identifying with them, and dancing like actors on a stage or puppets on a puppet theater. Stop. that program, and we should come to our original constitutional position, known as Krishna consciousness. At the present moment, the real master is material nature. Under the spell of material nature, we're becoming servants and masters. But if we agree to be controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His eternal servants, this temporary condition ceases to exist. It ceases to exist. I mean, as far as our participation in it, at least. It'll go on because there's always those that want to dance to the tune of Maya's song. But we don't have to be participants in that dance and that song. We can be with Krishna. It's a choice. And we're being repeatedly extended the option. And we're, you know, contemplating, yeah, I think it's a good, nice idea. But, yeah, but. In Prema Vivarta, it is stated, do not make the foolish mistake of trying to cross a river with one foot in two different boats. Nice metaphor. What happens when you put one foot in one boat, another foot in another boat? Boats start to move in the water, and you know, your body's going to rip into two. Or you have to choose, you know, one of the other boats. So the advice is, firmly put both feet in one boat. Boat of transcendence, and cross the river of material existence very quickly, very swiftly. Be very clear, not hedging. Very clear, firm. Then one more, Prabhupada's eloquent purport. This is the reply that Judd Bart gives to the king about calling him a crazy dull fellow. I'll read it, but summarize it first. He says, not a crazy dull fellow, I'm a realized soul. So you're shouting at me like this is inappropriate. And if I was a crazy dull fellow, shouting at me like that isn't going to accomplish anything if I'm a crazy dull fellow. So, you know, you're making a double mistake, either way. Mistake for mistake. My dear king, you have said, you rascal, you dull, crazy fellow, I'm going to chastise you, and then you will come to your senses. In this regard, let me say that although I live like a dull, deaf, and dumb man, I'm actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true, and I am a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There'll be no effect. When a madman is punished, he's not cured of his madness. Excuse me, King, but, you know, check it out. You're exhibiting your foolishness. Prabhupada's example is the one with a person who steals. He has a propensity to steal. He knows that if I steal, there's a chance I'll get caught. And in fact, sometimes he gets caught, he gets punished, and he gets released. And what does he do? Goes and steals. Because if he's, you know, a madman, if he's a compulsive thief, punishment isn't going to stop him. Scolding him, fining him, imprisoning him, he'll steal something in prison because he's a thief. Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes. You have said, this is like he's paraphrasing, Judd Bar is speaking to the king. You have said, you will punish me for being inattentive. What do you hope to accomplish by verbally or physically punishing a person who is situated in Brahman? Although he may appear to be mad, for liberated persons do not accept either what is useful or not useful. If I am not liberated, but mad and dull, by your punishment, you are grinding what is already ground. Just like by pounding powder, you do not recreate a solid object. Nice example. But finer powder. Similarly, by punishing the mad person, one does not pacify madness, but one makes him more insane. And that's the end of John Barrett's lesson number one. And here's Rahugana. Oh, first it's Shukadeva Goswami describing his little commentary. O Maharaj Parikshit, when Rahugana chastised the exalted devotee Jad Bharat with harsh words, that peaceful, saintly person tolerated it all and replied properly. Nescience is due to the bodily conception, and Jad Bharat was not affected by the false conception. Out of his natural humility, he never considered himself a great devotee, and he agreed to suffer the results of his past karma. No, he doesn't have past karma. But he's thinking like that because of his humility. The Tatte Nukampam Susamikshamano verse, which is quoted in the purport. He's thinking, the elevated soul is thinking, any difficulty that I'm enduring is due to my past misdeeds. And I simply accept them. It's like Ambarish Maharaj, sinless, perfected devotee, because he broke the fast of a codicy on time when Durvas Muni was, you know, chanting his Gayatri Mantra and the, you know, time when it was time to fast, to break the fast. So he took water. Durvas, when he came back and cursed him and all that. Tatte Nukampam Susamikshamano is exactly what Ambarish Maharaj did, or Prahlad Maharaj, or Haridas Thakur, or many such great souls. In principle, they accept it as Jad Bharat was accepting, due to my egregious misdeed, I'm now in this situation, and I accept the Lord's arrangement for me. Now, the Lord gave protection to each one of them in his own way, but that's how the devotee was thinking about themselves. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says there are two ways to read what's happening here. One is that Jad Bharat is accepting that because of his intense humility coming from prema, he's feeling, I have these misdeeds and I have to take responsibility for them, and so this difficulty is coming my way. So be it. I accept. But let my mind not budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by so doing, what happens? One becomes the inheritor of the property of his father. That's Lord Brahma. And who's Lord Brahma's father? Lord Vishnu. What's the property of Lord Vishnu? Spiritual world. So it's back to Godhead. One will go back to Godhead by maintaining that disposition. We, it's enough for some of the but we're not there, so what do we do? So we can't imitate the position of
such exalted devotees as Chedbar. We should not. We're advised to not imitate. But we can follow the example and let our mind not budge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we, at least minimally, we tolerate these anomalies and dualities and inebrities and unfair things that happen. They happen. We can still use our intelligence how to best serve Krishna, but we should try to tolerate and not become disturbed by people who are disturbed and dualities that are extreme. Little news, Hare Krishna news. While we were in our Mayapur GBC meeting, there was an earthquake in Christ Church. And we have a temple in Christ Church. And we used to have Gornatai deities in Christ Church until the earthquake happened. So while we were there, we were getting reports, and here's a little report in case you haven't heard. Nobody was hurt. The pujari, they were doing the Rajbhog Arti when the whole altar started to shake. And he got knocked off the altar. It was shaking so much. And he realized what was happening. So he quickly, lunged forward to protect the deities from falling, but they were already falling and they fell on him. And he got knocked again off the altar and bumped his head, got a bruise on his head. The deities broke into several pieces. They're not repairable. The temple is substantially, it didn't collapse, but it's the foundation is substantially damaged, and so it needs to be completely rebuilt. And Ramai Swami, who's the GBC there, said there's lots of very fine hand-carved wood interior, kind of a very, the kind of thing that you can't get people to do anymore. There are not artisans that are ready to do that kind of work. Maybe they'll be able to take it down piece by piece and put it back up piece by piece and restore hardwood interior hand carved things. Maybe. But they have to rebuild the temple, and they have insurance, so it'll cover the cost. But nobody was hurt. And then recently, last 48 hours or something like that, major, even much bigger earthquake in Japan, just off the shore of Japan, that they, something at 9 on a Richter scale. So it caused a tsunami because the major plates shifted, and so big tsunami came and crashed on the Japanese shore. And parts of Tokyo were damaged, so our devotees wrote a little note. And basically the temple is fine, the deities are fine. The devotees were pretty scared. Some of them lived in the 7th story, where they live, not where the temple is. And the whole building was, dancing. And the pillars of the temple were dancing. He used that language. They're not just wobbling, they were oscillating, is the word that he used. But the deities are fine, the devotees are fine, a little literally shaken, but everything is okay. So Krishna protected his devotees. And I was sharing this with somewhere along the line recently, when the World Trade Tower, it doesn't mean that, we won't die, but when the World Trade Tower thing happened, there are devotees that work in the World Trade Towers. And different ones of them, Krishna made someone was sick and they were at home. They were thinking that morning, really I should go to work, but, I'm not well, so I'll just take one more day and stay at home. Another devotee normally works in the trade tower, but they had to go to another office across the street to take care of some paperwork for their office in the trade tower, so they weren't in the trade tower when it collapsed. somebody else was up on the upper floor, and you know they were just delivering something on one of the lower floors, and when the crash happened. Another devotee was walking. He lives in New Jersey, so he was coming across by boat. He saw the first one hit, and he said it was so surreal. I didn't even register that it was real. And everyone also, they got off the boat and just kept walking along the street going to, you know, their office. And then the second one hit. And he said as he was walking along the street, the man right next to him got hit by a big piece of stone. And it knocked his head off. Like, hey, this is real. Krishna protect, there, we just did a little survey. There was something like 12 devotees. Nothing, you know, not what, a hair on their body was hurt. But, you know, even in such situations, it's not to say that a devotee won't die or a devotee won't get, you know, devotees can get in car accidents and things like that, and it happens. But at the same time, Krishna sends special protection to his devotees. We don't take unnecessary risk knowing that Krishna will protect, because that's Krishna's, that's not devotional service. But Krishna extends protection to his devotees, and Jad Bharat was feeling, this is one of the symptoms of surrender, feeling the protection of the Lord. Rakshisha Titi Vishvaso Goptritve Varanam Tava. One feels the protection of the Lord when one is in the mood of surrender. You feel it. You sense it. It's tangible. Jad Bharat was feeling the circumstances coming because of my past karma. Another reading, taking right from the Sanskrit of the verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, another is that from within his heart, Krishna inspired him to speak in order to remove the prarabdha karma of Maharaj Rahugana, and it worked. Because Maharaj Rahugana, although he was behaving, you know, unpleasantly, as a king might sometimes do, you know, arrogantly and brashly and passionately, because the king was cultured, even more cultured than his Jad Bharat's stepbrothers who were brahmanas and Angira Muni's line, the king was more cultured, because as soon as he heard transcendental knowledge, immediately his material identification was vanquished. He was, in other words, submissive to transcendence and transcendental knowledge. Knowing that the personality of God had used Jad Bharat as an instrument to deliver Rahugana from his prarabdha karma. So either way, the prarabdha karma of Jad Bharat was being eliminated in the auspicious way, like we spoke about before, or by using Jad Bharat as an instrument of the Lord's instruction. So who is, when there's instruction, question, who is the deliverer? We give credit to the person who is giving us transcendental knowledge, specifically according to scripture, the spiritual master. But is it, this is a philosophical question, is the spiritual master delivering, or is it Krishna delivering? The answer is it's Krishna's delivering. And he does so through the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the instrument, or the devotee who's, whatever, performing devotional service, speaking or singing or acting on behalf of, worshipping the deity, something, some service. It's Krishna. And using that devotee as an instrument. That's our philosophical understanding, and that's what's being presented by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here. People sometimes ask, Krishna's in the spiritual world, and he's having a good time. He's enjoying. But, you know, there's all of us, he's our father, and we're down here in this material world suffering, you know.
why doesn't he like do something about our suffering, relieve us of our suffering, if he's compassionate? He may not say it quite like that, but something like that. And he is compassionate, and he does so through the agency of others who deliver his message. It's Krishna who is the deliverer through the agency of the message deliverers that he gives his message to. And if we cannot honor his message deliverer, are we going to honor him? Or the other way around? What's the meaning of honoring him if we don't honor his dear representatives? Now again, the other way around. In order to approach him, we must be respectful and duly appreciative of and receptive to the messengers, the instruments of the personality of Godhead. That's Krishna's system. We may like it, we may not like it. That's his system. That makes sense. It's a good system. So Krishna is being compassionate. We're being obstinate, and Krishna is being compassionate. Obstinate means stubborn. No. There's some children that I've met, that's their favorite word. No. You can say anything, and then before you even finish your sentence, it's no. Especially from their parents. I don't know why. Come and eat your meal. No. I'll just stay there and don't eat your meal. No. Anyway. So we're like that towards Krishna. No. So what to do about such people? What's Krishna to do? Prabhupada writes in his purports here, he's compassionate. He arranges this ocean of love of God to flood the world through the agency of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this age of Kali, primarily through the congregational chanting of the holy name. And one who allows themselves to be immersed in that sound vibration of the holy name of the Lord, there these no to Krishna tendencies, it's like covering the rice paddy with water. The rice grows and the weeds don't grow as long as we stay in the holy name, the Sankirtan of the holy name of the Lord. It will help us become free from that defiant, rebellious tendency. Just a few more verses. Shukadeva Goswami continued, text 15. O best of the Pandu dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, the king of Sindhu and Sovira states had great faith in discussions of the absolute truth. Being thus qualified, he heard from Jad Bharat that philosophical presentation, which is approved by all scriptures in the mystic yoga process, and which slackens the knot in the heart. Does that sound familiar? Chindanti Kovidas Tasya. The same as the first canto, chapter 2. These topics of Krishna cut. Here it's slackened the knot. There it's cut the knot of misgivings. That's false ego. That which the soul identifies with matter. Just cut right to the chase, right to the very heart of the bondage. And it may hurt our little baby false egos a little bit, but it's good that it cuts the misconception of the soul identifying with matter and being the enjoyer of all of that. His material conception of himself as a king was thus destroyed. He immediately descended from his palanquin and fell flat on the ground with his head at the lotus feet of Jad Bharat, in such a way that he might be excused for his insulting words against the Brahmana. Then he prayed as follows.
those who are in the human form of life, they're not Dvipada Pashus, but in human form, they accept the Varnashram system, according to Srimad Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's teachings. The beginning of human form of life is to accept a system that regulates one to achieve the goal of life. That was the first offering that was made by Ramananda Roy to Lord Chaitanya in Kaveri. So, each of those varnas and each of those ashrams has one purpose, one common purpose. That is, whatever the duties are for the satisfaction of Hari. Samsatir Hari Toshanam. That's the goal. So whatever it is that I do and don't do, whatever I austere, like Yad Karoshi, Yad Asnasi, whatever you do and don't do, is for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. If that's, it's not just duties, but it's the purpose behind the duties. Not just, so it's consciousness. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not just behavior modification. Krishna consciousness. Or, you know, fashion change. Wear these nice clothes instead of the other ones. Anyway, so it's the consciousness behind what we're doing. Doesn't mean this is superfluous. It's just what's the essence is the consciousness behind what we're doing. And if that consciousness is there, then whatever it is that we're working on is to achieve that. It's to achieve the satisfaction of Krishna. In this purport, Prabhupada writes something that I've heard him speak hundreds of times, and that is when Vishwamitra Muni came for a visit to the palace of Dasarath, and Vishwamitra Muni was received very nicely by Dasarath because he's a cultured king. And when you receive a brahmana, these three things, remember from yesterday, a place to sit, even if you're very poor, a mat on the floor, some water, and some kind words. So the kind words were, how are you faring in your path to achieve release from birth and death? Here's the Sanskrit. Ahishtam yattat punar janma jayaya. Punar janma jayaya. Victory over birth and death. How are you faring? How is your project going on becoming free from birth and death? Like, conventionally we would say, how's it going? Or, how is everything? And people say to me, how is everything? I said, that's a big question. How is everything? Well, you know, some things are good and some things are not so good, to be honest, you know. But ultimately, Krishna is in control, so it's all good. So it's all good. But, it's, you know, it's conventional. It's just like a nice social exchange that people don't even think about what they're saying. How's your family? How's the wife and kids and stuff like that? Or, you know, how's the ashram going? Something. Cultured person, his thought goes to, how is your... He asked the sage whether everything was going well in his endeavor to conquer the repetition of birth and death. The whole process of Vedic civilization is based on this point. We must know how to conquer the repetition of birth and death. So if you come to someone who's guiding you in Krishna consciousness, and you come with, you know, something that's not, you've forgotten the goal, don't be unhappy if they remind you what the goal is. Be happy that they're reminding you what the goal is, instead of, like, you know, fixing your stubbed toe or your whatever little problem it is. They may put some bandage on your stubbed toe, but they're interested in ending this cycle of repetition of birth and death, and drawing your attention there. That's what Jad Bharat has just done with Rahugana, and Rahugana has recognized, and therefore he's feeling very respectful. This is the foundation of Vedic society. Learned scholars, brahmanas, saintly persons and sages who are fully aware of the Vedic purpose advise the royal order how to benefit the general masses, and by their cooperation the general masses were benefited. Therefore, everything was successful. We don't have that situation today. We don't have qualified brahmanas or kings that listen to qualified brahmanas, even if there were any. And so it's chaos. It's a free-for-all, you know. What's a poor citizen to do? Fend for yourself. Just, you know, head for cover. Look out. Here comes a brahmana. Or here comes a kshatriya. Look out. They don't know what they're doing. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful. Not, you know, flagrantly criticize these people. We just be very careful. And when we receive the right thing, apply it very carefully. So just a few more. King Rahugana said, "Oh, Brahmana, you appear to be moving in this world very much covered and unknown to others. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmana and a saintly person? I see you're wearing a sacred thread. Are you one of those exalted, liberated saints, such as Dattatreya and other highly advanced learned scholars? May I ask whose disciple you are? Where do you live? Why have you come to this place? Is your mission in coming here to do good for us? Please let me know who you are." Rahugana is accepting. He's like guessing. I don't know who you are, but I hold you in great esteem. I'm submitting like some questions who you are. I'm going to end with when he asks his first philosophical question. Right now it's just like informational kind of questions. "My dear sir, I'm not at all afraid of the thunderbolt, the King Indra, nor am I afraid of the serpentine-piercing trident of Lord Shiva. I do not care about the punishment of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, nor am I afraid of fire, scorching sun, moon, wind, or the weapons of Kuvera. Yet I am afraid of offending a brahmana. I am very much afraid of this." Why? And when you get hit by a thunderbolt, just to hear one is... But if you get hit by a thunderbolt, the worst that can happen is, you know, you're ashes. The body is ashes. But, or weapons of Kuvera or something, the body can be harmed or destroyed. But if the soul makes offense to a brahmana or a Vaishnava, it's worse, far worse. Prabhupada writes, there are many dangerous things, list them, but none is considered as serious as offending a brahmana like Jad Bharat. Therefore, Maharaj Rahugana immediately descended from his palanquin and fell flat before the lotus feet of the brahmana Jad Bharat, just to be excused. "My dear sir," his palanquin carrier is now "my dear sir." "It appears that the influence of your great spiritual knowledge is hidden. Factually, you are bereft of all material association and fully absorbed in the thought of the Supreme. Consequently, you are unlimitedly advanced in spiritual knowledge. Please tell me, why are you wandering around like a dullard? O great saintly person, you have spoken words approved by the yogic process, but it is not possible for us to understand what you have said. Can you kindly explain it?" He's asking for part two. And again, Prabhupada is saying, ordinary people in this age of Kali, they can't understand these things either. And so we have the Hare Krishna movement. by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by engaging people in Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy name, it uplifts our consciousness, cleanses our consciousness, purifies our consciousness, so that these subject matters, at least, you know, there's a chance to begin to understand them. But worldly people cannot understand them without the chanting of the holy name. So here's his first question, and that's where we're going to end. Text 19. I consider your good self the most exalted master of mystic power. You know the spiritual science perfectly well. You are the most exalted of all learned sages, and you have descended for the benefit of all human society. You have come to give spiritual knowledge. And you are direct representative of Kapiladeva, the incarnation of God, and the plenary portion of knowledge. I am therefore asking you, O spiritual master, what is the most secure shelter in this world? So remember where he was headed? Being carried on his palanquin? Kapilashrama. And he thought, maybe Kapila sent you. He knew that I was coming, and so he just sent you to, like, you know, enlighten me, the plenary portion of knowledge. So what's the first question besides, you know, the general information, curiosity kinds of questions about, like, who are you and where are you, who's your teacher and those kinds of things, the information questions. Here comes a philosophical question. What's the most secure, safe shelter to be found in this world? In the purport, Prabhupada writes, although Jet Bharat was an ordinary living entity, he had inherited all knowledge given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapiladeva. It was Rishabhdev, but a form of the Lord. Rishabhdev is presenting the same knowledge, because Kapiladeva presents Sankhya, the analytical study of matter and spirit, and Jad Bharat had it down. Not just theoretical, practical. Again, that's something that Prabhupada writes in this 241 purport. Practical realization beyond this body. So there's not even a chance to act on the platform of sense gratification. That's the stage of perfection. That's required for this vyavasayatmika buddhi. So we can't just hold on to our sense gratification, you know, options and march forward on the spiritual path. We won't. We'll be held back. Our progress will be limited. As confirmed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his stanzas on the to the spiritual master, Sakshat Hari Tvenasa Master Shastri, an exalted person like Jad Bharat is as good as the personality of Godhead, because he fully represents the Lord by giving knowledge to others. So maybe you'll be inspired to go further and find out what the answer to these questions are. Because we're going to end here. Or maybe to be continued or something like that. But, you know, the shelter is in the topics of the personality of God, or at the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, which are accessed through the topics of the Lord, which come from the Lord's devotee. So the Lord's pure devotee is that shelter, or the topics are the shelter, or the Lord himself are the shelter. Because any one of those three comes to the same thing. The topics aren't going to happen without a person broadcasting the topics. The lotus feet of the Lord are not accessible without his devotee. So all three work. When we were in Hyderabad,
There was this nice prayer by the Prajetas. Those of you that were there maybe remember. The Prajetas are seeing Lord Vishnu riding on his winged carrier, Garuda. And so they offer prayers. And what are the prayers? They say that the greatest benediction is the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Because through the association of pure devotees of the Lord, one can access the spiritual world and so forth, and the cycle of birth and death, and achieve all ultimately desirable things through this one thing. So stay tuned and find out what Jad Bharat says. Any discussion? I read something before text 14. That means text 13? Yeah. It's not there. You're right. That's right. It's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. It's been translated. Bhanu Swami translated it. Anything else? Anything else? Yes?
You have quoted two examples, like we are like children who say no to Krishna, or the Yama question, you know the kind of things that you can do. My question is like these devotees are not able to do what they are inspired for, like they are doing in their devotion, like I don't have that like stronger desire and to have. But I think
I got everything. Just keep the volume up.
Yeah, but I think sometimes I think that by not doing anything, life with some devotional service is better than life.
Yes.
Any devotional
service. Yes.
But I also hear this analogy of two roads going in different directions. You have to choose one road. So I feel sometimes very bad sometimes confused, but then I think it's better not to pretend anything. So I mean, do I still belong here?
Yes. Supposing you're walking along the street somewhere and somebody comes up and says, could you tell me what's the direction to the bus stop or to the store or to the university or whatever it is that they're looking for? And you say, yeah, sure, I can give you directions, but maybe even better, I'm headed that direction, I'll take you there. Oh, really? Thank you. And so you're walking along and you're explaining, you know, over there there's a big, you can't see it so well, but there's a big hole. If you step right there, you might break your leg, so watch out for that hole over there. Just stay over on this side. So, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this advice of Prema Vivarta is for someone that's like that, going along the path. They want to go to Krishna. They're just not really sure how to go to Krishna, but they know that's a place they'd like to go. And so some advice is being given. If you want to go to Krishna, beware, because you want to cross the river, not fall in it. And so this is the best way to cross the river. You can try crossing in two boats, but it's a little risky. You could just fall in the river you're trying to cross. The ocean of material existence, you can easily
err by not being clear what you want. If you're clear what you want, put both feet in the boat. So even putting both feet in the boat doesn't mean I'm totally surrendered and all of that. It means that I'm taking the process, and part of the process is I'm working on accepting those things that are favorable to attaining Krishna. And, you know, I'm neophyte at this, so, you know, I don't always make the right choices. I sometimes succumb to my conditioned tendencies and so on. Maybe, you know, lots of times I'm selective and all those kinds of things. But, you know, the advice is, if you really want to cross, so it's good advice. It's good advice. It doesn't mean, oh, I can't even think about it because I'm not ready to put both feet in that one boat yet. It's a cultivation. The boat is made up of cultivation. Anukulyena, Krishnanushilana is the language of Rupa Goswami. Anushilana, anu means follow, and shila means behavior or conduct. So I cultivate, this is how Prabhupada is translated, anushilana. I'm over here, the goal is over there, and I can't just like go boom and I'm there. I'm going to gradually cultivate. That's the boat. That's Rupa Goswami's boat. Both feet. I'm over here, I don't have to pretend or imitate or imagine or something. According to my capacity, I'll cultivate. I'm going to keep the goal in mind, and to my capacity, I'll cultivate. Get, you know, moving to that standard. In the beginning, or you know, somewhere towards the beginning. And I'm not at the platform of Jad Bard or Rupa Goswami or these elevated souls. I'm way over here. That's okay. You're on the boat. The boat of cultivation. Towards that goal. And you're not like, you know, pushed off the boat because you're not so qualified. You're on the boat. It's just, you know, Rupa Goswami's qualification is very simple. I accept the goal. That, you know, say it the other way. I'm in a negative term. So I'm not envious of the goal of Krishna as the Supreme. I'm not there, but I accept that that's the goal. That's the qualification. That's both feet in the boat. Now, I have this conditioning that I you know, I look at myself and I go, wow, I'm conditioning. And the more I engage in the process of purification, I realize, wow, there's a whole lot more conditioning going on here than I had any clue before I started the process. A lot of, whoa, a lot. Okay, that's sobering. So now I have more distance to cover than I thought, but that's okay. The process is effective, and I'm not envious about the goal, Krishna, being, you know, serving Krishna. I don't have a problem with that. I've just got a lot of, you know, I need to work on stuff so that I can come to that stage. That's Rupa Goswami's boat. Welcome on board. And he's, you know, very, very compassionate. He understands what our condition of heart is, what, you know, what Kali Yuga is and what people struggle with. Look at, you know, the person who he's serving. Lord Chaitanya accepted Jagai and Madhai by the extra mercy of Lord Nityananda. Okay. Anything else? Oh.
Like, like I was thinking of taking something to fill up my mind or something to practice in my life. But I'm not a happy we try for some days and then again it is like seems like it is withdrawn from my life. Like again there is a reason that we need to do it again.
That kind of question reminds me of the question asked of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, how do we become sincere? You know the answer. By being sincere. Everybody knows what it means to be sincere. Everybody knows what it means when somebody's not sincere. We know when somebody's sincere. So be sincere. And if you're not sincere, you become sincere. Practice it. And similarly, you know, to take up something that you do from the heart, when we're not used to doing things from the heart, we're used to doing things from the head at best, or we just don't do things. We're lazy. So you practice it. And same as I gave an answer before, I'll give the same answer again. My experience, and as well as my understanding of the teachings of Krishna consciousness from the heart, is best practiced in terms of chanting. And when you become capable, practiced at chanting from the heart, then all of your service becomes like that from the heart. So the root thing to give very singular focused attention to is chanting from the heart. And then you can ask, okay, well, what does that mean? And how do you do it? It's, you know, there are many things that can be said, but in essence, it's not, you know, you say, in contrast, it's not just making some sound come out of your mouth. That's not from the heart. That's mechanical. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you can make a machine that makes the sound, and that's not chanting. Or you can train a parrot to make the sound. It's not a machine, just, you know, it's a parrot. It can make the sound. But that's not chanting, and our mouth can make the sound, and that's not chanting. But when it's so, Bhaktisiddhanta says, when you call out sincerely, "Oh Lord Nityananda, you are the deliverer of the pure holy name, and you're especially kind upon the most fallen, and I am in that category. I don't have any qualification. I'm your best candidate." Oh Lord Nityananda, kindly deliver the pure holy name. And when that touches your heart, the very same lips and tongue and mouth making a sound, that's chanting from the heart. That's chanting. I like that. Practice like that. You know, and we can give her so many yeah buts. Yeah, but, you know, this and that. Just hear that message and practice that message sincerely. And it will teach you the art of accepting things from the heart and doing things from the heart. the other second, one other, is those who are most closely and carefully guiding you in your spiritual life. Open your heart to them. And when you learn that art, then it makes it so much easier for you to open your heart to these other things that you mentioned. Someone else? Yes. Your attention goes to? Lackings and inabilities. Take your attention to Krishna's abilities and abundant capacity. That's the remedy. Neutralize this other one by that one. Because even something that's dull can become very sharp. Something that's ineffective can become very effective in the hand of Krishna. Self-confidence is based upon confidence in Krishna. Self-esteem is based upon great esteem for Krishna, and etc. You can spiritualize that which is, you know, very down in the material scale to the topmost position. That's Krishna consciousness. Or as Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, a blind man can see the stars. A lame man can climb mountains. And a fool can understand the conclusive truths of the Vedas by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So, you know, your lackings and shortcomings and disqualifications, as abundant as they may seem to you or may factually be, there's this other. It's like Prahlad Maharaj coming before Lord Nrsingadev saying, how can I offer prayers? Look at my disqualification. I have no qualification. I have abundant disqualification. But those guys, they've asked me to offer prayers. They're the demigods. I can't say no to them. They're the ones that should be offering the prayers, but they pushed me in front of you, and I can't say no. But I don't have any qualification. But there's one thing that I know. You're very merciful. That's the, you know, don't just stop at your disqualification. Go the next step. You're very merciful. And because of your merciful nature, I know that if I offer even something that's very paltry unto you, you'll accept it. So here I go. Here come my prayers. It's not your qualification. It's His mercy. There's the solution. Just accept it. One, two, I think we'll end. Translation.
Bharat, Bharat Maharaj ke jo seminar jo bhi hua hai, isse जो जड़ महाराज के इसमें समझ में आता है कि उन्होंने अपने सेंसेस को और अपनी अदर एक्टिविटीज को विड्रॉ कर लिया था एक तरीके से अदर एक्टिविटीज से. मटेरियल एक्टिविटीज में एंगेजमेंट से एंड मतलब सिमिलरली ऐसा केस मतलब मेरे को समझ में आता है कि जब भी एसोसिएशन मिलता है आपका तो बहुत एक स्ट्रांग इंस्पिरेशन आती है हार्ट में. बाकी क्योंकि दूसरी चीजों का कोई मतलब उस जगह से हम अपने आप को विड्रॉ करके और सुनते हैं तो
we
मतलब महाराज फियर यही रहता है कि बाहर जाकर मतलब वापस हम अपने वर्क प्लेस पे जाके और उन्हें एक्टिविटीज में लग के सेम इंस्पिरेशन को कंटिन्यू करना मुश्किल हो गया है.
एंड फियर इज कॉम एंड गो बैक टू द फेवरेट प्लेसेस वी गो बैक टू आवर होम प्लेस बीइंग इन द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड एंड गेटिंग प्रॉब्लम.
लाइक दोनों का सर्टिफिकेट थाने स्थित हमारी एक्टिविटीज को कंटिन्यू करते हुए हम करें और उनको कॉन्शियसनेस वे में करें.
सो हाउ टू लाइक स्टे इन आवर पोजीशन एंड रिमेन कृष्ण कॉन्शियस स्टे इन आवर पोजीशन इज कैरिंग आउट व्हाट वी डू.
You gave the answer. Stane satakshutikatam tanavan manobhir. That's the answer. By continuing to hear. You're not banned from continuing to hear when you go back. Continue to hear. And apply. Wow, that's a novel concept. You take that which you've heard and you live by it. Take it from the outside, bring it inside, and you live by it. Shrinvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti Sadhavaha. That's how you do it.
Should we also minimize the unnecessary engagement or activities?
Sure. That which you don't need. You know, house cleaning is always good. Something that's not necessary. Something that's necessary. You use it, maintain it nicely. Something that's not necessary. Do you do things that's not necessary? We all do. A little at a time. Not too radical. Just, you know, a little here, a little there. Make the heart pure. You do that, it makes the heart pure. And when the heart is pure, then things come in more easily.
Seeking your blessing for that one is very difficult.
It's only difficult because we're attached. It's not difficult. It's not difficult. It's nice. We're just attached. And it's not ashram specific. It's, you know, it's lazy specific. You know, we're lazy in mind and lazy in spirit. And you know, we like being attached. Although it brings us our suffering. Yeah.
For example, the body, one method I try to follow is not method, but that I try to hear the sound. And
good.
And then, so you said we should chant from heart.
Okay, okay, you can start just from hearing. That's a pretty good start.
So my question is, Maharaj, when you're hearing the song, can we be prayerful? Like,
yeah, it happens naturally.
Yeah, when the sound is properly heard, it automatically.
Yeah, it happens naturally.
But sometimes, like, because of the winter time, we are 16 rounds. On a day one, you have a little bit good experience, then...
Hills and valleys are going to be there. That's life.
So
until we're on the, you know, nishtha, at least, stage, or ruchi, or asakti, etc. stage, there's hills and valleys. So
What do you do when there's a valley? You keep going. What do you do when there's a hill? You keep going. Be attached to Krishna, not to whether it's a hill or a valley. Cultivate that. And as far as this statement you made about, you know, practice hearing, the book that we're going to distribute, this Japa book of Borijan Prabhu. Just says Japa. It's not the art of anything. It just says Japa. That's the title. That the theme is just that. In fact, it's very specific. One mantra at a time. Okay, so I'm going to take this other question. Sorry? It has been the tendency to rely upon our own strength, but for attachments to be really removed, it requires descending mercy. So, how can I develop faith upon descending mercy and let my heart open for the removal of my attachments? Seeing within me sometimes I doubt I can really be relieved from this thing. But then I think, based on hearing, anything is possible by the grace of Krishna. How to increase faith? By acting in knowledge. It's a very simple Bhagavad Gita purport lesson. When you act in knowledge, it increases faith. So here's how it works. You hear a whole bunch of stuff. Just like this, you know, something out of that whole bunch of stuff that you hear, or you read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and something really resonates. So then, let me try that something. Let me act in knowledge. And what happens when you act in knowledge? You get a realization. Wow, it works. Wow. And that increases your faith. So you go back to Bhagavad Gita, or you go back to that place where you heard so many things, and you, let me hear with a little more faith than I had the time before when I heard this. And then you'll hear some other things that really resonate. So let me, the secret to increasing faith is applying, application. With people that are lazy, don't. So they don't get realization. So they don't increase their faith. So don't be lazy. Be an applier of what you hear. And not mechanical applying. Apply with devotion. Apply with devotion means I want to reach this goal. And I have some degree of confidence, at least in what I've heard, that the person that's speaking has something of value to offer, some faith in the source. And then when I apply, I've read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and there's some things that really make sense. So I apply it. I'll share this. That's how you nurture faith. And you know, there's the flip side of that, is when the false shelters, the false faiths, you realize they're not doing it for me. And for that matter, not doing it for anybody. I had this conversation, I'll end with this. I had this conversation with a devotee, Purna Pragya. Does that name mean anything to you? Some of you. He's rewritten the whole of Chaitanya Charitamrita in some, you know, like very compact volumes. Whole of Mahabharata, whole of Srimad Bhagavatam, Purna Pragya. He's Brahminical by inclination. He and I joined the same temple within about a month and a half. He and his wife is Narayani. She makes her base here in Vrindavan also. Purna Pragya is her husband, or anyway, was her husband. I asked him, and I saw him, and I hadn't seen him for a long time. And he said, do you recognize me? I said, come on, you're Purna Pragya. We joined the temple around the same time, Boston. He said, oh, now you're so busy, I don't know if you would remember. Yeah, sure. So I asked him, what's happening? What are you, you know, like, how is your endeavor to overcome the cycle of birth and death. And he was explaining what he's doing, and then he started to get real excited and said, the thing that I'd like to do is be set up where I can speak with educated people and go through a very careful, systematic seminar in explaining that you're not the body. And I was thinking, you know, something very esoteric or high and philosophical, but the root of the problem, he was excited about it after all of this rabbinical work. Same as what we're hearing here, this Jed Barrett story. That is, if one can understand when we buy into the program of we're this body, where does it take us? What layers and layers and volumes of suffering we have to undergo because of identifying with the body. Where does that path take you? And if you can factually understand that you're not this body but spirit soul, where does that take you? It's the Mahat Dwaram, Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahoravi Muktes. It takes you to the spiritual place that we all want, like we just read, the place of happiness and peace. But not, you know, but slowly, step by step, slowly, step by step, slowly, step by step, to that place. He wants kirtan, I can tell. I've got a solution. It's right here. We're going to end the class because, you know, we're being invited to end the class by one of our members. I brought with me from New York some Radha Govinda Mahaprasada. It's been refrigerated. So it's, you know, like, not the same as coming right off the plate this morning's Mangalarti offering, but I'm sure it's going to be all right. I think I have enough.
There's some kids around there. Here's another one. These are smaller pieces.